Welcome to a podcast from the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Economic Research Service, or ERS. This podcast is drawn from the ERS magazine Amber Waves. Each issue of Amber Waves is a window into ERS's broad research program covering production agriculture, food safety and nutrition, the food industry, rural economies, agricultural trade, and farm-related environmental issues. Amber Waves is published 5 times a year in print and online. You can find the entire article online at ers.usda.gov/amberwaves. We are joined now by Sheila Sankaran, the executive editor of ERS's e-zine, Amber Waves.
Thank you. Here with me today is Dean Jolliffe, the author of the Amber Waves article, Adjusting for Living Costs Can Change Who is Considered Poor. Dean, welcome to our podcast. Before we get started, why don't you give our listeners a quick overview of the article?
Thanks, Sheila. This article examines how accounting for cost of living differences across metropolitan and non-metropolitan areas affects measured rates of poverty. The federal government started recording poverty rates by metro and non-metro areas in the 1960s, and since that time, the percentage of people who were poor has always been higher in non-metro areas. The federal definition of poverty, though, assumes that the cost of living is the same in, say, a small town in the South as it is in, say, New York City. There's now been more than a decade-long discussion led by the Census Bureau on how we might reform or change the way we measure poverty. One of the several items under consideration is to account for cost of living differences in our measure of poverty. This article explores this one item by using an experimental cost of living index proposed by the Census Bureau. The findings indicate that when using this experimental index to adjust poverty rates, there's a complete reversal of the non-metro-metro poverty rankings, with the adjusted non-metro poverty rate being lower than the adjusted metro poverty rate. This finding is important because several social assistance programs define their eligibility criteria in terms of the poverty measure. The implication, then, is that changes to the definition of poverty could possibly have large effects on the distribution of social assistance funds.
When you mentioned the cost of living index, I noticed that you used the word experimental twice. Why is that?
Yes, that's right. Thanks for picking up on this. It's important to emphasize that at this point, there are no specific plans to actually implement any of the proposed reforms for how we measure poverty. A short comment on the history and context of poverty measurement in the U.S. should help to explain why I'm repeating the word experimental. Our current definition of poverty, as well as the choices we make in measuring it, is about 40 years old. Policymakers and researchers have raised questions about whether how we defined poverty in the 1960s is still the correct way to think about poverty in the 21st century. Reflecting this sentiment, the Joint Economic Committee of Congress initiated an independent review of the poverty measure in the early 1990s. The outcome from the Poverty Commission was a lengthy report with recommendations for many significant changes. It was pretty clear from the report that if every proposal were enacted, who we considered to be poor would change. It was also fairly clear that even if everyone agreed with the report's proposals, which was not the case, we didn't have ideal survey data to implement all the changes. In order to better understand the potential implications of reform, the Census Bureau established an interagency committee to research how best to implement the proposed changes and also to explore the demographic implications of the proposed changes. The results from this committee's research are labeled as experimental because they are not specific policy proposals. They represent the federal government's attempt at implementing and understanding the implication of the Poverty Commission's report on reforming the poverty measure.
In your analysis, the key factor in determining differences in cost of living is rent data. Are these data really a good indicator of cost of living differences?
Well, this is one of those cases where we don't necessarily have the ideal survey data. Ideally, we'd like to construct some fixed bundle of goods that represents some socially acceptable, minimal level of living. We'd then want to find out how much this bundle of goods costs in different parts of the U.S., but we don't have any data sources like this. So what the Census Bureau has done is to assume that the budget for a low-income family consists of 2 aggregate items, all expenses related to shelter and all other goods. The Census Bureau assumes that all shelter-related expenses account for 44% of the budget, and they use the fair market rent data collected by the Department of Housing and Urban Development. The Census Bureau uses the fair market rent data for a few reasons. First, survey data indicate the housing costs are the largest budget component for a low-income family. Second, previous research indicates that there's significant variation in the cost of shelter across the U.S. Finally, the federal government regularly collects this data. While it's not ideal, the fair market rent data is meant to represent the price of a 2-bedroom housing unit of standard quality, plus all utilities, excluding the telephone.
And what about non-housing expenses? How does the cost of living index account for those?
For all of the goods that are not related to housing costs, it's assumed that there's no variation in these costs. This assumption is largely because we have no data sources to estimate how these costs differ across the U.S.
So if they're not varying, how do these non-housing costs affect the index?
Okay, the cost of living index is a weighted average of these non-housing goods and the fair market rent data. The fair market rent data have a weight of 44%, and those non-housing goods, which don't vary in costs, have a weight of 56%. The net effect is that including non-housing goods dampens the variation in housing costs.
Once you account for the differences in cost of living, how does this adjustment change the face of poverty?
Perhaps the most marked change in the face of poverty is that the poor would be comprised of fewer non-metro residents and more metro residents. Similarly, rates would go up in those states with higher cost of living, and they would go down in states where it's cheaper to live. The face of poverty would also get younger. The results show that of those who are currently poor but would be reclassified as not poor, disproportionately more of these people are older. Similarly, of the non-poor, who would be classified as poor with this adjustment, they tend to be younger adults. Again, these findings are important because they could potentially affect the distribution of social assistance funds.
What about poverty at the national level? Would the overall level of poverty go up or down?
In my analysis, I'm only looking at the effect of adjusting for cost of living differences. There are potentially many ways to do this, but the proposals that are under consideration would keep the overall national poverty rate unchanged. With any index, it's possible to scale it up or down in such a way that the overall level of poverty doesn't change, while the index still reflects that certain areas cost more and others less. I'm told that there was an episode of the TV show The West Wing in which reforming the poverty measure was one of the plot issues. If I have the story correct, the character playing the president says that he does not want to preside over a change that would reclassify millions of Americans as poor overnight. Whether I have my TV history exactly right or not, the point I'd like to make is that any changes made in how we measure poverty are probably going to be the product of both research findings and policy concerns. Our aim is to provide useful research findings to help policymakers understand the implications of change.
Thank you, Dean. That was very interesting. I've been speaking with Dean Jolliffe, the author of Adjusting for Living Costs Can Change Who Is Considered Poor, appearing in the November issue of Amber Waves. You can find the complete article at ers.usda.gov/amberwaves. You will also find articles on food safety improvements underway in China, how revenue insurance can help farmers manage risk, and the long-term growth prospects for Brazil's agricultural sector. This is Sheila Sankaran. Thank you for listening.
This has been a podcast from the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Economic Research Service.